Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Wava, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host and 2021 partner in crime, Spencer Williams. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm doing good.
We're going to have an interesting conversation with this movie. Mm-hmm. And of course, we couldn't suffer our own mistakes without having to bring in someone else to suffer alongside us. And that is intern slash stenographer slash part-timer slash coffee bringer slash Jane on scene host, Amy.
Yo.
I think I got that consistently correct. That's
a lot of slashes.
That's all you. All you do is slash all day long.
I'm a slasher.
Where's the coffee?
Oh, well, the garbage can says otherwise.
The garbage can says otherwise?
There was a caramelizer in there.
Stick around as we have a unique show in store for you, as we will be talking about Warner Brothers' recently released latest entry into the Matrix saga, The Matrix Resurrections. So before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We are almost at 300. We are at episode, I believe this is episode like 297. And we got so much in store for you over at our website. Check us out at filmlosophers.com. There we got everything from anime to drama to action to comedy to even just deep dives into conversations. We have a lot of stuff over there. Check us out, filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out on the socials, as Spencer said, Facebook and on Twitter and Instagram. Leave us a thought. We'd love to know your thoughts on any of the previous episodes. But of course, we're also interested in what you think about this episode. So listen in, tune in wherever you stream podcasts: iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn. Everywhere where you stream podcasts, we are there. Look us up, give us a subscribe, and let us know what you think. But speaking of conversations, we have a very unique conversation today, as we will be talking about a movie whose franchise actually kind of spans the duration of our younger lives. And oddly enough, someone saw it fit to create another entry in this. So I don't know what the thought process was, other than money, but
I feel like the beginning of the movie properly explains the entire thought process of this movie.
I concur.
We are talking about The Matrix Resurrections. This was a movie, honestly, that I don't think anybody really considered hearing from again. But for
Why would you? We were happy where it ended.
We were like, chapter closed. Beautiful. Thank you. Your story is complete. Rest now.
Yeah,
pretty much. So before we get into more details, Spencer, why don't you give us an official synopsis, goodness?
In a world of two realities, everyday life and what lies behind it, Thomas Anderson will have to choose to follow the white rabbit once more. Choice, while an illusion, is still the only way in or out of the Matrix, which is stronger, more secure, and more dangerous than ever before.
That's right. No.
Updates.
Directed by Lana Wachowski, the film stars Keanu Reeves, Carrie Ann Moss, Lambert Wilson, and Jada Pinkett Smith, who are all from the original film. And they're also joined by Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, Jessica Henwick, Jonathan Groff, Neil Patrick Harris, and Priyanka Chopra Jonas. This is actually the first Matrix film to be shot digitally. So all Matrix films prior to this were all done on Super 35 format.
Oh.
So it's really cool to hear that. I guess it's really cool to kind of reemphasize how much better the originals were compared to this. Like, oh, this is all on digital. So, okay. The film was initially set for release on May 21st of 2021, which would have premiered alongside John Wick Chapter 4. However, the film was postponed to April 1st of 2022 due to COVID-19 pandemic, On October 5th, 2020, the film was moved to December 22nd. I don't really know what a lot of the thought process is in terms of making sense of moving things based on the pandemic now. So it's just like, eh.
It's based on how much money they think they can get in theaters. It's all about revenue maximizing.
True. Very true.
They really should not have done that with the opening to this movie, because now that's all my brain is at.
I think that's where everybody's brain was at. A couple last pieces of info. Hugo Weaving had actually planned to reprise his role as Agent Smith, but had to turn it down due to scheduling conflicts with his theater work. And speaking of performers, Trinity's alter ego, Tiffany, is now married to quote-unquote Chad, played by Chad Stahelski, who actually directed the John Wick series with Keanu Reeves. He is actually, in fact, the stunt double for Keanu Reeves in the original Matrix trilogy. Hence, they both played Neo. So in a way, Trinity is technically married to Neo, interestingly enough. I think they really did a lot of those little nods and subtle, like, implications of, like, oh, this is connected to this and this is connected to that, just to create a bigger, I don't know, draw in for different crowds. But honestly, I don't really see how this movie was, bottom line, necessary to anybody.
It wasn't.
Like, not even getting into the actual review, just in the idea of this movie being in existence, first thing you think is like, well, why? Like, but why? You know, it kind of makes it difficult to really kind of engage in this type of movie. Especially, I mean, I get it. They bring back one of the Wachowski siblings. I get that. You know, okay, they're gonna try to strike gold with this, you know, with one half of the brain trust for this movie.
Wasn't the other like a producer or something?
No, they were both directors. The Wachowski.
No, I mean on this one.
Oh, I don't know. That's a great question.
Because I know only one of them was directing, but I thought the other one was like a producer or something.
I think the egregious meta just kind of, it wasn't even meta, basically saying Warner Brothers is going to make this with or without you, so get on board. And I was just like, oh, so we just went right there at the beginning.
There are so many crazy choices in just that one sentence of dialogue that I would have, if I was working at Warner Brothers, I'd be like, hang on a second. Let's rethink about what we're really saying.
Do we want to say this right out loud to everybody in front of everybody?
Do we want to self-insert Warner Brothers into a movie as a bad guy, kind of?
Yeah.
Will it make us money?
So here's the thing, because we're getting a little too deep into this.
It's so hard.
Right from the jump, our
expectations. So the other sibling was a writer. They were a writer. They didn't have directing credits.
Okay.
So here's the thing. The first Matrix film came out in, what, 1999? 2000?
Yeah,
1999.
Let's see. 99.
Here. 1999.
The intern says 99. That one she remembered.
The intranet. And mind you, this movie in itself, the first film was
brilliant
in only so many words, perfect. Yeah. Like, I feel like this movie really struck it with the whole, you know, futuristic, but not too far in the distant future type of world. The idea of like rock mixed with EDM in this, you know, What is it, like, pleather, plastic-wearing clothing era of the world?
It was a lot of latex.
A lot of latex and a lot of people struggling to get out of pants is what I finished up. But this movie, I mean, that movie really created kind of the I guess, phase of where people drew from that moment on forward. I mean, not to really knock down a really great film, but I mean, a lot of people carried that persona of Neo with them when they, you know, when they went about the real world. You know, people they wore the long black trench coats. They wore I had a friend who purposely spent like almost $200 to buy the boots that Neo wears in that final, or one of those final scenes in the third act, when they go to try to save Morpheus. Those boots went all the way up to his knee, and in the movie, and they, the guy that got them, they went all the way up to his knee. Looked nothing like Neo, I'll tell you that much. But like, a lot of people, you know, drew from that inspiration. A lot of people, you know, wanted to be Neo. A lot of women and young girls wanted to be Trinity. You know, they wanted to be the badasses of the Neo futuristic world. And this movie kind of created that. I mean, did you see any of that when you were, you know, around that time when that movie came out, Spence?
You know, here's the thing about me. I'm very insular, like, when I was younger, about my movie preferences. So, like, you know, I know it was a movie that was talked about a lot, but, like, I don't really remember a lot of people, besides the trench coat thing being a thing for, like, a segment in there. I don't really remember, like, showing up super often. People did like trench coats because of the Matrix.
Yeah. Well, and like, for me, a lot of the people that I was growing up with, a lot of people that I hung out with, we were all a bunch of, like, super nerds. So, like, movies and making movies and seeing really cool things about film and seeing things about, you know, the kung fu and stuff like that. And then, of course, you have Keanu Reeves coming off of, you know, all of his highs with Johnny Mnemonic and, you know, Speed and all the movies he did prior to that. It seemed at the time that a lot of people were kind of gravitating towards not just the aesthetic, but also, like, the bro kind of character that he was, like, whoa, like the whole Bill and Ted-esque.
Classic Keanu, right?
Yeah, classic Keanu. For my school, like, a lot of people, and then here's the thing, I went to a private school. They made every attempt to try to bring that stuff into the school. Like, there was a dress code and everything, and they would still, like, come in with, like, black trench coats and all that kind of stuff. Now, mind you, this is before the sad events of things like Columbine and things like that, where that persona was used in a very negative light, kind of like how we're seeing with Punisher in certain political aspects. But before then, like, it was the cool thing to do in school to have the slick hair back, the black sunglasses, you know, be able to do the kung fu. Like, that was all the kind of stuff that I had grown up with when all my friends and I had started watching the movie. What about you, Amy? Did you see any of that, like, in your social?
In the circles?
Yeah.
Yeah, you saw it a lot more from the nerd outliers. And I say that with love and affection because I...
She's talking about me.
Well, you saw a lot of girls get more bobs that they were able to slick back a la Trinity. Those really terrible... I will stand on this hill and die on it. Those sunglasses.
Oh, well, they were stupid.
The ones that are like, I don't know if I could be a Nike... Like, someone took a Nike swoop and then just filled it in with extra glass. Like, that design has always irked me really bad. But there were a lot of trench coats, a lot of people getting into pleather, latex.
Do you know how many people spent money on glasses that just clipped on the nose because of Morpheus?
Well, thank you, Lawrence Fishburne, because you were amazing.
He did make them look cool.
Fishburne is just the coolest man.
And that's the only and those were the ones where I was like, okay, I got you on those ones. But all the other ones that were the weird long shape, no, I did not like those. But I saw a lot of it. We saw a lot of people pretending like, where was I in 99? I wasn't in high school yet. I was an eighth grader, which meant there were people that were jumping off swings at my local playground pretending to be Neo in midair in affectionately dubbed bullet time. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, we're in the Matrix. And then we had a couple paranoid kids that actually thought they were in the Matrix. So while it really did, considering Y2K was going on.
April 4th, 1999.
Yeah. It was still 99.
No, I'm just saying. But so, you were in what grade in 99?
I think I was like in eighth grade. I didn't graduate.
No, you had to have been in seventh grade.
Either way, I was still at the same school, and the concept was still the same.
Because I was in eighth grade, and you're a grade below I am.
Thank you.
She's a baby.
Okay. Anywhooski. She's a baby. Anywhooski, I saw it a lot more prevalent in the outer circles, but its impact was still there. It also so much was, I remember a night at youth group where my youth pastor and the co-youth pastor came in the trench coats with the sunglasses, and people were like, yeah. And I was like, what is going on?
I'm sorry. What?
Yeah, I'm not joking. They came in trying to both look like Neo. It was really bad.
What? I'm still
stuck.
You have
to be relatable with the children.
Yep. Yep.
The sad thing is that you and I have actually both worked in that kind of ministry, yep. Yeah, and this is
don't try to be relatable. Just be you.
Just be you. It's like that's rule number one. Don't be relatable. Just be you. Like,
oh no. Oh no, my gosh. No. No, no. Yeah.
I feel bad. You have my sympathy.
Thank you. I needed it. Especially then, I needed it.
In terms of, so we've all seen the trilogy, right?
Officially now, yes.
Yes, I have seen it.
Okay.
I couldn't remember the third one. And so in prep for watching this one, I went back through with my offspring, who's never seen it, and watched 1 through 3. And I was like, oh, I forgot about that part in 2. Oh, okay. 3. I haven't seen this. Never mind. Okay, I'm just going to enjoy it. We'll sit here and watch it. Okay, we're good.
So did any of you ever get a chance to see them in the theaters?
Oh, 03 for 2 and 3 were May of 03 and October of 03. So I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say yes. Because I think what happened with my family is we saw the first Matrix at home because it'd been on VHS by that point.
May and November.
I was off by a whole month for October. Really?
Yeah. So just making sure we get the information right.
Yeah, that's the important kind of correction.
Because they were both in 03, and one of my favorite guilty pleasure movies in 04 has the guy that plays, the actor that plays Howard Wolowitz on The Big Bang Theory dressed up as Neo in a high school dance. So yeah, that really, really counts right now.
It does. Go ahead, Spence. Go ahead.
And I think we saw the second one in theaters because I remember being really annoyed at how that one ended with the like cliffhanger.
Yep, that's true. I'm trying to remember when this came out. The Animatrix. Did you ever see The Animatrix?
Yeah, I did. I rented that off of Netflix.
Yeah.
I do not remember it.
I remember it.
I don't remember it. And I'm
I don't
sure
even
I
think you've
it.
Seen it.
You just a lot of things,
well,
right?
Well, no, because I remember asking you about the trilogy and you could barely remember the second one. Let alone the third one.
We'll get to the conversation about some of the sequences in the clubs with the Merovingian in the second one where
that's
I was
the
like...
the white-haired dude?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, the Merovingian is the French dude. The white-haired dude is the architect.
Okay. Well, No. The twins with the white dreads are his assassins for the Merovingian. So
the Merovingian,
You are correct. But yeah, I was like, oh, I forgot there's an entire like club here that has very specific persuasions. Pacific persuasions.
Okay. So let's get back.
I can't say specific. I have problems.
So, okay. So Spencer, you've actually seen one in theater.
Yeah.
Like at least one of them.
At least one. I don't remember what happened.
You, Amy, haven't seen any of them in the theaters. Okay. I got a chance to see 2 of them in theaters. I didn't get a chance to see the first one. Because I was in junior high at the time, and so just wasn't on my radar, like, in terms of going to the theaters. But after it came out on video, you better believe Blockbuster, first person in line, you know, 2-day rental and everything. So my memory's pretty decent when it comes to remembering a lot of the parts of the second and third one, including the Animatrix. Which, interestingly enough, there's a couple scenes that are in the Animatrix that kind of look similar to the movie that we saw. But in terms of expectations, knowing obviously that we've talked about, there didn't really seem to be a rhyme or reason for this particular movie to be made. I want to start with Amy. What were some of your expectations for this film?
Oh, I was going to... Well, part of me is like to saying, man, I really hope this doesn't suck as like an option for an expectation. Because to be brutally honest, the first question was why? Like the trailer gave away everything. If the big reveal was, you know, that they're still there or that they're still together, not together, Neo Trinity, maybe Matrix, maybe not. We don't know what's going on. They gave it all away in that trailer. And then I was like, but why? I don't know if why can be an expectation, but why?
you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I thought so too. And I think they had like the microphones turned on everywhere and were hearing everybody say why. Because then in the very next trailer or the second to next trailer, they included that scene with Trinity where she goes, "This is as far as I remember in my dream. In my dream, this is as far as I go." Kind of like slightly insinuating that she doesn't make it beyond this point. Mm. So I'm like, someone's listening a little too well. Go ahead, continue.
Yeah, I think my biggest expectation was why. And if you're going there, please don't suck. And I'm going to leave it at that. But it's a lot of why.
Okay. Spencer.
Okay, so going in this, I was kind of like, yeah, why four? That's a real good question. And then let's fast forward to like maybe like, you know, a few weeks out, like a couple of days before the movie comes out. So they released the Matrix Awakens for consoles.
Mm-hmm.
It's an Unreal 5 demo. It's just supposed to demo
Unreal the song. Engine.
Yeah. And so what they did is they got Keanu Reeves in there and Carrie Ann, whatever
her last Carrie name. Ann Moss.
Yeah. And like, so they're just, you know, talking about stuff. But there's like a weird bit where they're like both in the city and like Neo's like, "I thought we were supposed to have creative control over this experience." And she was like, "That's just like marketing BS." And I'm like, it got into that weird thing that we're about to get into with the movie. And I'm like, this is odd. And once we got, I actually saw the beginning of the movie. I'm like, I'm beginning to feel like someone needs to ask Keanu if everything's okay. Like,
blink twice. Blink twice, friend.
Like Warner Brothers has him somehow.
He's locked up and he's got to be there until he does all three next pictures.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't see. I mean, I know I saw the announcement, but I didn't actually see the full playthrough of it.
Yeah, well, okay. Taking that experience with seeing the actual movie, I get the feeling that Warner Brothers eventually wants to just, like, take real Keanu out of it and put in, like, digital Keanu.
Mm. There we go.
That's what that whole video game Maybe part was about.
Matrix.
Really?
Yeah. Because, like, what they did in the video game experience was they were constantly swapping between Keanu's. Like, it was real Keanu and then a fake one. And then, like,
it was digital Keanu and then Keanu.
Yeah. And digital Keanu has made some leaps and bounds.
He's looks getting really a lot better. Like, yeah. I saw the teaser on YouTube and it's like not everything's the same. And the only reason I knew it wasn't real Keanu was because the way the light was hitting the skin around the bottom of his nose and his upper lip. And that was it.
Yeah, it's not as like instantaneous. I know that's fake. It's like that's fake.
It takes a bit. But, yeah,
yeah.
Like I know it's fake. I just can't put my finger on it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
In terms of expectations for me, like one of the biggest things that I really so talking about the film franchise, I'm a huge fan of the film franchise. The third one didn't really hit the mark as well as two. Two was a far cry from one, but still it was good. It was decent. And one was a masterpiece.
Right.
You know, so, and then all the little extras on the side in terms of like the Animatrix and all the other little fan-made pieces, it's all been great. There has yet to be any single question as to why not when adding those parts, because a lot of those just expounds the lore, if you will, of what got to that point. One of the biggest things that I had in terms of expectations for this movie was hoping that it would stay with the heart of the original trilogy, because I know there's a lot to say about, you know, oh well, it's gonna do whatever, or it's, you know, it's a cash grab, or it's this, this and that. But in all honesty, like I really wanted going into this, I really wanted this to work. Like, full boat. Like, I really wanted this to succeed. I wanted to be... Like, how awesome would it be, just like with everything we've seen with other film franchises and other film, you know, film studios, like with Marvel and with, you know, what we're doing with some DC properties and other instances, even like with Sonic the Hedgehog, we're bringing opportunities to bring back what we loved as kids back to the forefront for like younger people, like the younger generation. You know, not a lot of people know about Sonic other than like, you know, YouTube videos and Let's Plays. Not a lot of people know about, you know, other types of franchises, unless it's like, oh, it's that old person's movie or whatever. But like, this is an opportunity. Or like with Ghostbusters, that's a great example. This was a hope that a film franchise that I loved in junior high and high school would come back to the forefront and be what it was when we first saw it, as an opportunity not just to engage in like an incredible, you know, fantastical future, you know, neo-futuristic world, but also an opportunity to see like groundbreaking techniques. Like, this was literally the very first time anybody has ever used the phrase bullet time. Like, it's a way of filmmaking, and the way they incorporated it in the movie and the way they pretty much patented it to perfection ultimately kind of set the tone for every amateur filmmaker to try to do that after the fact. Like, I had friends who had like 4 or 5 DSLRs, and they would have them play in sync and do a quick like video around the person and then use that in like some random video that they were going to have for a presentation. But people I knew were doing that. And so that's what I was hoping. Like, that was the biggest expectation. I wanted this to succeed enough so that way anybody that I know, any young person that I knew that was going to be seeing it, would have that same kind of like ooh and ah feeling when it came to what is, you know, asking the question, what is the Matrix kind of thing. You were going to say something, Amy?
No, I was listening.
Oh. So, jumping in, and we are going to have spoilers in this conversation. So, if you haven't seen the movie, shame on you. It's free on HBO Max. Why don't you just go watch it already?
Until sometime next month when they take it off. Much like Dune that I didn't get to watch.
Yeah.
It'll be back.
I wanted to watch it.
That was literally, like, I actually expected you to jump into the
my first impressions.
No, you'll, when he says nope. it'll be back.
Nope. And I left it alone. It was an easy target.
I figured you like those low hanging fruit ones.
No, because I could make a really, really deep cut in regards never mind. To that person, then to that
it's
actor.
Not funny anymore.
exactly.
So, first impressions, let's go with Spence. The disdain on your face right now.
Head shake. Get to shake it.
Rubbing temples and everything.
Like, it's a spoof movie almost. Like, why would... Yeah. Like, the first like part of this movie where people are like, Thomas Anderson, you have to go and back into the Matrix, this video game. Like, it's also mildly confusing when they talk about the movies as a video game when there are video games of the movie that are also kind of still, I think, part of the canon because they said they were canon. And so then you have to, like, it's a lot.
They are canon.
But, like, why? Like, this is, like, the most self-aware cash grab I think I've ever watched.
Self-aware, overcomplicated,
yeah,
cash grab.
And it's just, a lot of it's super unnecessary.
Yeah.
And also, like, someone pointed out that there is a section that they glossed over that would have made a much better Matrix movie than the Matrix movie that we got. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why? Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm. Why did we do anything? We're back to the why train. It doesn't make any sense to me.
What about you, Ames? First impressions without giving your review away.
Okay.
Anytime soon, because no, you know, this is dead air.
I'm going. I'm
like, literally, I'm people are listening to nothing while you think.
This is a ridiculous rom-com that cannot live in the bubble of trying to be a sequel and a reboot simultaneously.
Mm.
That's it.
And then of course. Wait. Why? After coming off the literal train of watching the trilogy, this. Why? Okay.
All right. So, first impressions for me about this film. First off, it was nowhere near the vein of the original trilogy. There was like a sense of religiousness, I guess, to the first trilogy. There was a sense of almost like a sense of holiness in the belief of what Neo could do from the very beginning all the way through to the end. There was like a sanctimonious vibe of how this belief and the ability of this one person, kind of mirroring a little bit of the Christian faith, like this one person is capable of saving all of what's left of humanity. The stakes were there in the original trilogy. The sacrifices were very real. The necessity of getting the job done was paramount. This movie seemed like another play that they were doing in front of Loki in Thor Ragnarok when they were
Matt Damon, is
with
that
Matt
you?
Matt Damon and Sam Neill. Like, it didn't seem like they were serious about this. Like, at any point in time, you could take any small 5-minute section and remove it from the film and show it to somebody, and they would have no idea what you're talking about. They would have no idea what this movie is from. Vice versa.
I can think of one where they probably would be able to figure it
How
out.
How much on the nose do you have to be if it's not the pod of the sequence where they're coming out of the pods?
Oh, if it wasn't that, it would have been the one in the theater where they have the original Matrix and original Morpheus but up on the curtain. That is the only way. If you took this to somebody that hasn't seen this, they love the original Matrix, you took that section out and go, here, and they'd go, is this a Matrix movie? What's going on?
Like, and here's the other sad part of that same coin. On the flip side of that, you took any 5-minute section and mushed what was left together, removing that 5-minute section anywhere, nothing would be missed.
Yeah.
Like, the movie would still run the same way. Like, this movie has no, there's no congruence to the film in terms of, like, the necessity of every section right next to each other. When you look at any movie, when you look at any well-done film, take, we mentioned just a second ago, Thor Ragnarok, okay? You take Thor Ragnarok, you take any 5-minute section out of that movie, and it's going to be felt, because in that movie, Taika Waititi, who is an incredible director, makes every attempt to create something impactful within each scene. It doesn't matter if it's something so oblivious that it's like something so subdued and under the radar, or something monumental and just impactful, like the scene when Thor and Loki are in the elevator and they're talking about how Thor sees Loki, and it's just like a real raw moment. Or any of those scenes, like Taika takes care of everything that he does when he puts his movies out there, like every scene. So any 5-minute, you know, section lost is going to be noticed. This movie, I felt like you could have taken whole scenes out and it still would have gotten to the same place. Yeah. Without any failure, we got someone over there sneezing. Without any failure of like losing any of the beats that this movie tries to make.
Yeah. I can think of one really, really large one that you could pull out and it wouldn't carry any stakes or any other weight, and it wouldn't. Like, it's the warehouse fight sequence.
There's a lot of parts
in
this
movie.
Wait,
there's a couple of warehouse fight sequences, aren't there?
Yeah. There's this, I mean, come on. It's
the one with the Lost Boys in it.
And you're talking about the Exiles. You're talking about Hook, Lost Boys.
Yes. Okay. Bangering. Sorry.
Like, why was this man yelling while they're trying to have a fight sequence?
Yeah.
It felt like someone else's movie had just entered this movie, and like they were having an argument about whose movie this actually was, and I don't know what that was about.
So really quick, just a brief overview of this, of the story of this film, because this movie can be explained in like less than 5 minutes.
Well, I have the opposite problem, because like if you told me what's the main story of this movie, I'd be like, I'm not quite sure.
Making money.
Besides that,
that's literally the only. That from making agent, making the boss of Thomas Anderson, making his boss be Agent Smith, and him having this like kind of unique truce so that they could work together, to take out a common threat, and then who knows what's going to happen here moving forward. Like, the whole movie is just about them, about Warner Brothers and somebody getting paid.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
That's a very good synopsis.
The story of this movie is so loose, and it's so shaky, and it's so, like,
clunky.
It's like the worst kind of bread dough that you could ever have. It's not even well kneaded. It's not even well put together. It doesn't have all the right elements, the right ingredients. The story is so hokey that it feels like it should have belonged in that Unreal Engine demo thing. Like,
yeah, no, this would be like, this would fit in nicely there because you wouldn't expect that to have a good story, especially with it being a demo.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. This feels more along that. This feels more along the lines of somebody experiencing this rather than this being an actual quote unquote canon entry in the Matrix saga.
This also feels like it could have been a choose your own adventure, like in a game where they're like, oh, it's your first. Your first game, we're going to do a playthrough. It's going to be great. And you're like, nope. I would like to go to the simulated coffee house.
I would
house.
Like to go back home and put this game down. And
I would like to talk to my obnoxious friend at work and have him say the same three things over and over and over again.
This, and here's, and I know this is probably going to get a little blowback. I don't really care. The biggest disappointment to this movie was Neil Patrick Harris. Not for the fact that he's a bad actor, because Neil Patrick Harris is a fantastic actor. He's not really a good bad guy.
He's adorable.
Like, he's Doogie. He's Doogie Howser.
Those glasses, and
those glasses were so great. I know. Oh my gosh.
I came over the other day. Yes, I was talking to Spencer, and Spencer's like, I need to get me those glasses.
I thought
they were so cool.
They look so nice.
I told him he could rock them.
Yes.
And that's probably a really big problem. When my first comment about Neil Patrick Harris is his glasses and not anything he actually acted in this movie. That's not good.
The whole role that Neil Patrick Harris plays in this movie is just, it's so disjointed. It makes no sense. It reincorporates a, like we were saying earlier, the bullet time effect, which was a way to film the movie, not an actual time measurement type of, you know, implement. It didn't make sense, and he was using it to slow Neo down. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And then on top of it, he was supposed to be not only bad, but he was also supposed to be like conniving, and he was supposed to be threatening, you know, and it didn't make any sense at all to have him in that role. I don't even remember if he had a fight scene. Did he have a fight scene?
He avoided all the punches.
Yeah, that was his fight scene, avoiding stuff.
He was
in bullet time.
In bullet time, yeah. He was a big disappointment for me in this movie. Like, I love the actor, I love his role.
Yeah.
But I didn't like what they did in terms of, like, his ability to be evil, I guess. Because, essentially, there was no, unlike the original trilogy, the architect wasn't an evil man. He was a program, you know, pretty much operating on the system of ones and twos. Like, he was based on algorithms, the balance of equations. He was the ultimate, he was one of the main bad people in this movie, pertaining to still a part of the system. You know, because obviously you had Agent Smith, who was out of the system and he was out of control. But in terms of within the system settings, the architect was just, he was very methodical. He was very calculated.
He was doing his job. It was the difference. So the balance of it, and the Oracle brings it up in the original trilogy, that they are balancing and unbalancing an equation. And the architect at any point, even the entire time we see him, he does not feel like a big bad. He does not feel like you are supposed to hate him. He is providing Neo with the choice. And the choice can ultimately be bad or good, depending upon where you are morally. With Neil Patrick Harris, initially when we see him as the therapist, I'm like, okay, he's some type of a therapy program, which I was like, he's gathering information, he's doing whatever. And then suddenly he's like, I'm the big bad. And I'm like, okay, so your job suddenly has like twirly mustache shenanigans, like villainy coming at you. It didn't make sense.
No, it didn't. And it was really hard to kind of, and it was really hard to kind of see the weight of both sides, like the balance of it all, like where the true harm and evil came from in this film. Because ultimately, that's what you want. You know, in going back to the Matrix movies, you know the ultimate side of this sense of evil, this balance of good and evil in the films, is Agent Smith. Agent Smith is ultimately that tremendous weight, not only on Neo, but also on the entire Matrix as a whole.
He's the swarm mode.
I guess.
So in this movie, there's now no longer replication of agents. It is swarm mode. Basically, everybody becomes a bomb or whatever. They just murder a whole bunch of batteries in an effort to stop Neo and Trinity, which is activated by Neil Patrick Harris. And in the originals, we see the replication, even though it took time. Agent Smith went through and basically infected, virused everybody, but he never like straight up just murdered folk for the given.
Well, because when it goes along with the idea of sacrifice. Smith knows if he's going to pretty much assimilate someone, I guess is the best way to use. If he's going to assimilate someone, that person has become an extension of himself. It's not going to be like, oh, I'm going to be seeing from your eyes, but it's your body, it's this. Like, that part of him is him. Fighting, breathing, all that kind of stuff, that's him. Still, in some form or another, you know, Agent Smith. And that's part of that sacrifice, knowing if this person dies or if that person dies, that part of Agent Smith kind of feels all that and goes through all that. I'm pretty sure he doesn't die, but that assimilation just, he feels that part of himself. Mm-hmm. And in this mode, it is like we were saying, it's like, oh, someone just hacks a bunch of brains and then kind of forces them to, on their own, jump off a building.
Which, you know. That seemed to be a big, like, sticking point for a lot of people, that it was super unsettling.
Besides being unsettling, it also seemed illogical from the point of the analyst. Because if we go way back to the first one, the whole point of keeping all these people in tubes in the first place is to use their body heat to like power everything. And if you're killing people, you're shooting yourself in the foot. And that was the thing. I was like, are they actually killing all these people? Because if they are, this is like the opposite of what they actually want to accomplish. And I don't understand why we're doing this.
Yeah, because it goes against everything that which, mind you, has been disproved and mocked over the course of millennia. Yes. You know, in terms of the idea of a human being providing enough energy to power anything.
A child with candy and coffee can do a lot of damage.
But that child is not going to power your city.
A child is not going to power machine cities.
I think it was Futurama who kind of really dug their heels into that one and was like, wouldn't it take more electricity to keep them alive than what they're producing? And it was interesting. It's really funny. But the I guess, mythos, if you will, of the original film is that each person provides the amount of power to help power the Matrix.
Yeah.
You know, and you're right. There's a sense of care and understanding for that in the first film, throughout the original trilogy. And then in this movie, they're like, bombs away! And they just start dropping stuff dropping people over the edge and throwing them, like having them throw themselves at Neo and Trinity on the motorcycle. And it's like, you guys need these, right? Like, if they're brain dead, they're not.
They matter, right? Do they? That was the other thing that it seemed kind of like. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but suddenly it's like mindless swarms of people are fodder to ensure that two people are saved.
Yeah, it's very nonsensical, especially since, you know, the analyst is in control of the Matrix,
and he's a program.
Just make stuff appear and drop it down on them. Like, it doesn't seem like it should be that hard.
Yeah. And I don't know, like the whole role of the analyst really confuses me a bit, because you're right, he's a program, but at the same time he's got massive control of the Matrix, and yet he's so accessible that the one person who could probably tear him to pieces has been coming to him for therapeutic help, and it just takes like an instant of like an awakening for him to like wake up and get out of that stupor for Neo to come in and just tear him apart. Like, the idea of his role, like, is it a a modified, updated version of the architect? I don't, because he, well, the thing is, Neil Patrick Harris created this Matrix.
This version. And he even
says,
it.
He says, you know, the people, they don't want to get out of my Matrix. They don't want to get out of my version of the Matrix. People don't want to be free from this because I've created it as such, blah, blah, blah. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know where his role lies in the grand scheme of, you know, anything. Like, I just don't, I don't know how to put it, because it's like, I don't know where he belongs in the movie other than out of it, because there's no point for him.
I got another one for you in the same vein. Jada Pinkett Smith.
Oh my gosh.
As General Niobe, because apparently she can't be commander. It's 60 plus years. She did not know how to act like an old lady. She should be almost 80 plus or 90 at this point. She would not let them do makeup around her eyes to make her look older, so she looked like she was airbrushed. And then she's just like wandering around.
She looks like a young person turned old back in the 90s.
Which nobody could, like, she didn't know how to act. Like, you could hunch over a bit more. We can give you, like, we can knock out one of your kneecaps for a little bit. You can hobble. Like,
Jada Pinkett Smith is not, she was never that good of an actress. The only reason why she had any kind of infamy in her life was because of who she was married to. Like, she had her stint on Fresh Prince. Like, she was on it for like less than a season. But outside of that, like, producing, she was in Set It Off. Like, her career isn't really marked with a lot of successes. And her whole role in that movie was very minimal. Like, her whole role was to be the strong silent type. And she did that well, because nobody wanted to hear her open her mouth. And it's like, I've seen her act more on her podcast, Red Table, whatever, than she's done in her entire film career.
Yeah.
Like, that woman needs to spend less time talking about other men's stuff and how much she's done whatever outside of her marriage, because they have an open marriage, and making Will Smith cry. And
he
focus
cried a lot too, and I feel really, really bad.
Have you seen that?
No.
So, was it last year or year before?
Brief aside, I believe it was this. It was the last 2 years. I just know this man's been living in torment.
In the last year and a half, maybe 2 years, Jada Pinkett Smith has created this podcast called The Red Table.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Exactly. And this table conversation consists of her daughter, other female friends. They talk about all things women and female empowerment, which is all great and gravy.
Mm-hmm. Until?
Until she does an episode where her and Will Smith are sitting at the table. And then Jada Pinkett, they're sitting across, kind of like myself and Amy, they're sitting across from each other. And Jada Pinkett starts just talking about how she's had infidelities in the past, and the men that she's known while married, and she's admitting it now because she wants to be open and honest.
But she's been like, and mind you, this was when they had taped it. I think it was on the tail or right before the person that she had been actively seeing and sleeping with, that was not Will Smith, had reached out to some news outlets and was actually talking about it. And it was almost kind of like, I guess I got my hand caught in the cookie jar and I should explain it. Meanwhile, poor Will Smith is sitting there silent, and he is red. It's not even red rim. He is crying, and he's sitting there listening to her. And you're like, dude, get up from the table. Like, you don't need to sit here and just listen to this, man. It's rough. It's rough.
Yeah, it's really bad.
And I have no ill will towards Will Smith ever. Some things I don't approve of in his movies, I just don't like him. Mm. Like, meh. But Men in Black 3 is a treasure. But yeah, it's messed up. And then coming into this Matrix, it's like, I'm like, why were you the one? That
like, of all the people they could have suddenly picked.
Because shoot, I was rooting for a Captain Mifune offspring to straight up and pop in there. Like, Captain, do you remember Captain Mifune? Okay, so in the last one, he's one of the guys in the APUs, like the big rigger alien like machine. It's, I basically started calling it Gypsy Rose at one point. And he's shooting all of the squiddies that are coming through, and he's making his last stand.
He's the one who talks to the young kid and tells him, you know, how old are you supposed to be? How old are you being a part of my core? He's, I'm 18. He goes, shoot, y'all would have believed you were 16. Well, I'm 16. 16's too young to be a part of my core. He's like, the machines will kill me either way. They don't care how old I am.
And he's like, yeah, if you don't fill up, if you don't fill up my rig fast enough, we'll have some machines and I'll have something coming. But the dude is just like, he's fun. You root for Captain Mifune. He dies. Mad. You're mad he dies. And then we get this and you're like, it's been 60 years on the outside of the Matrix. And we meet on the ship with the new team. Like, she's the granddaughter of Captain Roland, i.e. the white dude that was like, I don't believe in Neo. I'm like, okay, if that's a grandbaby, there's children around here somewhere. Like, come on. Why is this woman still in charge? Like, why? It was difficult. And then if we're talking about acting, Jonathan Groff. I need to bring up Jonathan Groff.
The Agent Smith of this movie.
He knows who Jonathan Groff is, but
I'm telling people who are listening,
if you haven't known Jonathan Groff from his stint on Glee, his role is King George in Hamilton, still currently available on Disney Plus. His role in Spring Awakening, the man, or as was it Kristoff in Frozen?
I think so.
The singing voice.
No, he's the speaking voice. They didn't let him sing in the first one. They only let him sing in the second one in the shorts. It was ridiculous. Sense. He can sing. He has a Tony. Calm down.
Okay.
Anyhooski.
Sure.
This was...
Nobody understood a single thing you've said prior to this, but sure. They heard the
Anyhooski?
The Frozen part, but everything else, go ahead.
Oh, just let it go. So he is not just jarring. For the one moment that I really did appreciate, his transition, we have like some type of a break or a flashback or something where he channels Hugo Weaving's energy and mannerisms, and it's a full Mr. Anderson moment. That's the one thing I was like, oh, spoiler, that's nice.
No, he doesn't. He thinks he does, but he doesn't. Like, Jonathan Groff is about as like vicious as a teddy bear. He looks like he probably punches with cotton balls. He looks like he has a pair of cotton balls.
I appreciated like, that he tried.
The man does not seem like
he
has a
stop
single...
Stop talking over me and let me finish.
I'm just... You're
I was
making
saying
a
that's
huge...
The,
go ahead, go ahead.
That was the one moment in the entire movie where I was like, oh, look, he tried. And then everything is just like, nope. He keeps calling him Tom.
Jonathan, can you do a Hugo Weaving impression? Sure I can. And that's what we get. It's like really bad.
Yeah.
It was bad.
We could have had Hugo Weaving.
We could have.
We
yeah.
could have also had Lawrence Fishburne, but guess who said, no. And I'm like, good
I
on
thought,
you, man.
That they just hadn't contacted him, because that was the last I heard about that.
They didn't contact him.
No, he said, what he had what said was, that? He doesn't know why he's not in the movie, that you should go and talk to the Wachowskis. So that's what
that's
he said.
That's messed up.
It's very odd.
So I don't know what all that means. But in his place, we got Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, which, if you're familiar with any of his work, he played in Candyman as the main character. And then he also did Manta in Aquaman. And he also was in... I didn't know he was in Watchmen. He was in Watchmen.
The new one?
Yeah, the TV series. He's essentially... Dr. Manhattan.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But he's also, I know he was
he's
in.
He's really good in that.
What was he just in?
This movie.
No, prior to that.
Look, he's a lovely actor, but no, this was another, like.
Are you banging your head on
the. I'm a pop filter. Yes, banging my head.
Yeah, it's really weird because, like, I liked him in Candyman. I thought he was really good.
He was great in Candyman.
But here, he just comes off as so.
Yeah. Even in Watchmen, mm-hmm. like his role in Watchmen is really great. Like it's mm-hmm. super, it's such a surprise when you get to that point in the show where the full reveal happens. and it's like, oh my gosh, what is going on? And you're like, oh. And it's incredible. His role in that is great. Candyman, likewise. The Trial of Chicago 7, he was great in that one. Aquaman, I don't remember him as much in that one, but I know he's in it. This just seemed like...
robotic.
I don't know. Like, no, not robotic. It seemed like, again, going back to the Jonathan Groff thing, it's like, let's play a game. Let's see your best impersonation of Morpheus from the first movies. And let's get the camera rolling and go. Like, it didn't seem like it was serious. You know? His whole persona, his whole role in this movie was to be an amalgamation of both Morpheus and Agent Smith. I guess that's how he was programmed to be in this iteration. And he just doesn't hit any mark. Like, neither. Morpheus in the first films, Lawrence Fishburne, he is a guide. He is a freaking leader. Like, Morpheus in those movies are... He's such an incredible performer. His character is so necessary. He is the linchpin to the entire trilogy. Without Morpheus, you wouldn't have anything in those movies. Like, not only is he responsible for the decisions to bring about the One, but he's also the linchpin to keep the faith within Zion and there to maintain the atmosphere, if you will, for the captains that are working alongside him to get them to safety and get things rolling. Like, he's everything. I would have done everything to have him out of this movie. Like, this Morpheus is not Morpheus. Like, there's even parts in the movie where he tries to intentionally try to act like Morpheus. Like, oh, this is what he did. Like, Morpheus. And he tries to, like, do the voice and everything. And it's like, dude, you're kind of pooping on, you know, Lawrence Fishburne now. Like, for real. It just, I don't know. It kind of rubbed me the wrong way because I like the actor. The actor's a good guy. Mm-hmm. But,
Well, I think that's kind of the way that this movie hits, is that we know these actors are capable of great things, or things that you're like, yeah, you're really good. Let's go with that. And this movie just takes all of that wonderful mythos from the originals and it stands on top of it, and or it tries to stand on top of it, but it's like, it's pratfalling. We're like, oh, I'm going to slip. Oh, I'm so funny. Like,
It seemed like nobody knew in this movie wanted to take it seriously. It's like playing a brand new game with your friends and you're the only experienced one, and you're like, no, guys, you don't understand, we all got to go through this. Oh, look what I could do, I could jump over here and throw this. Like, no, you guys don't get it, we got like 30 seconds before we have to start. This next battle's going to come up. You don't understand. Oh, check it out. I could make snowman. I could do this. Look at this. Blah, blah, blah.
That's cute, like, for like the first 10 minutes.
You know what I'm talking about, Spence. I'm looking at you. And
yeah, this is very targeting.
I'm like, it's me in any game where I'm like, oh, I'm going to get you. But then I also turn that off. Like, I don't do that the entire 2 hours. Like, I think that's the other thing that drives me kind of nuts, is that it feels... that the heart that the original trilogy carried, the story that it carried, no longer exists in this in this iteration, and it is heartbreaking.
No, without a doubt. And then the whole intention behind Neo being the One, Neo actually being an anagram for the word One, you know, everything that they did to create that, and now it's like, he's One and there's a Two. Like, there's now two Ones in this universe, where the way they and I don't even care if I'm spoiling the way this movie ends, because this movie just upset me. Like, you come to find out, first off, at the tail end of this movie, they try to do a Toy Story 3 where they're like, well, if we're going to go, we're going to go together hand in hand. Like, you know, when the toys are going towards the it's like, all right, well, we're going to jump. They're not going to make us do anymore, blah, 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 whatever. And they Thelma and Louise this bad boy, and they jump off of the building, and then it's like somebody left the wire hook still stuck to Carrie Ann Moss, Trinity.
She was flattened out like somebody's like, oh. Who's got my pants?
It literally looks like she's hanging on a wire holding Neo, and he goes, it's not me, is that you? And she goes, yeah, I think it's me. And it's like, oh, we are spoofing this. Okay, it's like, because here's the thing, it would be fine if there was no indication that Neo still knew how to do what he was doing.
Which he shows time and time again. He's like deflecting bullets. He's force pushing people. He makes this little ploy at when he's like, can you still fly? And he goes and he starts to power up and he goes, nope. Like that one was cute. I was like, okay, solid.
But they show the ripple
in
the ground and
everything. You're like thinking, okay, shoot, he might, nope. Okay, that's cool. We got one less. And then just out of left field, she's like, I'm flying. You guys, I'm like, then why couldn't you deflect things?
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you even doing this whole movie?
Like come on, seriously. Girl. Like I'm all for girl having, I tried to logic this part out too when I saw it. I was like, is it because their one is a biblical sense? Is that why she absorbed its power? Like when they were in getting resurrected by the crazy machines where they
had
blood
got
transfusions?
Shot. She also got what? Wait,
what? I don't know, blood transfusions.
See, for a brief,
Did your parents have about the first time talking about blood transfusions? What are you talking about?
When they were getting resurrected in their weird little chambers where they were split open like
you
little
had
turkeys.
You had said when they were in their chambers, and I immediately thought about Matrix
you
2.
You thought about the Zion orgy. You said in biblical sense,
and what does that mean? It means they had sex.
Which
and
they
you're
did.
Like, at blood transfer? I'm like, No. What kind of... You need to go back to school and learn, you know, sex edumacation because...
Edumacation.
Nobody... There's no blood transfusion involved. If there is, you need...
You're
Jesus.
Doing something else.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a little jaded right now.
Yeah, that's a song.
Jada's Pinky Smith.
Oh my gosh. So I tried to figure it out, or I was like, when they were being resurrected in whatever they called it, the anomaly pod or center or whatever it was.
The anomaly center. It's right next to the Martin Luther King Rec Center.
Like, that was another really trippy one, that they have him completely split open and there's a whole bunch of little like machines that are climbing in and out of his body. He's conscious. She's next to him conscious and they're both like being worked on and I'm just like, and I was just like, it made no sense. And it still makes no sense.
None of this movie makes sense.
Because an anomaly is a singular happening.
This is the
not
thing.
A multiple happening.
This is the thing. Like, this movie makes no sense at all, whether if it's Amy's weird sex edumacation or the idea of, like, having Doogie Howser as the bad guy, like, or having King George as this menacing wannabe, you know, bro from California. Like, none of this makes any sense. In fact, I think what I said made more sense than the movie does. And that's sad because this movie shouldn't have... Number one, it shouldn't have been made. If it wasn't going to be... Here's my ultimate like bottom line thought on this. If it wasn't going to be made with the excellence that the first three were made with, it shouldn't have been made. Like, plain and simple. If you're wanting to create that same kind of, you know, nostalgic yet still futuristic type feeling and emotions and emoting from people, and you know, then you have to do what you did in the beginning, and you have to really wow them. You have to show them something that is brand new and fresh and groundbreaking, something that isn't like, well, we're making Matrix 4 whether you want to or not, here we go. It's like and maybe that was the initial like cry for help from the director at the beginning to say, hey guys, just so you know, I'm warning you now, it's a poo storm in there. So
yeah, that line at the beginning of like, well, Warner Brothers is doing it with or without us, like that was the cry for help.
Because they could have picked any studio. Yeah. They could have picked any name. Mm-hmm. They could have picked any other, even a fictitious. Like they could have picked any fictitious, you know, studio, video game dev, a graphics engine partner, whatever it may be. They could have said anything else. But no, they literally just said the word Warner Brothers. They didn't even say Warner Brothers Gaming Interactive.
They just said, yeah, they said
they said Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers. Yeah. And we're all like,
it's like,
oh no.
Yeah. It's like, all right, cat's out of the bag, deja vu. It's not even.
And all the execs are like, yes, this is beautiful. We can take it.
Oh,
and
we like that our name is in this franchise. Mm-hmm. Yes, let's do that.
Like, acknowledge that we are canon, part of this universe.
They're gonna make fun of us. That's gonna be cute. Because you know what? We're gonna make millions. Like, that's literally all I thought about.
Oh my gosh. It is Pooh Storm is too nice for them.
Now, I know I've already mentioned, we've mentioned several things noting about this film, but is there anything you guys wanted to highlight, or, you know, any bigger complaint that we didn't touch on?
Here's a complaint.
Okay.
Let's talk about, like, there's a brief segment in the middle of the movie where, like, they're talking about how, like, the analyst came to power. He was like, oh, yes, there was a civil war between the robots. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? Like, what do you mean there was a civil war?
Are you telling me Terminator happened in the middle of the Matrix? God dang it. It's like,
I feel like that could have been the movie right there. Everything was fine. Like, you could make, like, everything's fine. But then, like, the Civil War starts and Neo's like, oh.
God damn Cyberdyne. That literally would have been a great entry point. Like, yeah. You could have totally threw everybody for a loop. And then you have, like, Arnold come out like, I'll be back. And then he blasts off to, like, to the future. And John Connor comes out. Oh, yeah, I'm sending him to go take care of my mom. Like, that would be funny. That would be cool. But, and it's all owned by Warner Brothers. They're all owned by Warner Brothers.
Oh, then why? They could have.
Someone's about to recut this movie.
Because I feel like there was something about when they even mentioned that Civil War that I immediately thought of Cyberdyne for some reason. I was was there a logo that I just, like, didn't fully see, but I saw it and, like.
Right. You go back to the Matrix, it's literally all over the place.
The Matrix, brought to you by Cyberdyne Entertainment.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, they could have even made, like, what I was talking about, like, that could have been the intro for The Matrix 4, and I feel like that could have been a better arc there.
Or, like, a prequel to Matrix 4. Yeah. Like, literally make a series about the Civil War. Yeah. Like, the Machine Civil War.
Because that at least sounds interesting.
And you don't have to worry about big names coming back. You don't have to worry about Keanu Reeves, because he's dead at that point. Mm-hmm. Carrie-Anne Moss, she's dead at that point. You know, you're not going to see Jada Pinkett. You're going to watch, like, you probably have to see Jada Pinkett because it's Jada Pinkett. But you're going to see, like, the machines fighting and them, like, learning about the robots that want to go with the humans. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that seems cool.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be totally down for a series like that. Not this hot mess that we got. Like, give me something thought out. Amy, was there anything?
So, no, I agree 100% with that. That and then Ion, not now.
Io.
Io, Ion, bam, bam. If they
this
just
isn't
took off the
Ion
Z.
Television. This
they should have just took off the Z. But so Io, like the Civil War, the programs and the machines working together, them figuring out a way to get the programs out so that they're actually, like, in the real world working with them. I was like, that's a great expansion of the universe without having to, like, it's not even a pun, dig up the old team to create a new story and to have it validated. I mean, what did they expect that we weren't going to go, wait, that's a really good story right over there. Can we just, like, we just circle back?
Right eye over there.
we circle back. And then this movie did not, it's so frustrating. Between the warehouse sequence with the hook versions of the exiles with all of the really bad costuming, I swear it was an 80s movie. That section.
They all look like Robin Williams from Jumanji.
Oh, they did. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I can't even see it now.
What year is this?
Oh my gosh, that I couldn't.
Just yelled at them, Jumanji!
Maybe gets them all out. Maybe gets them all out.
A little tornado appears and they all get sucked into the game board.
Oh my gosh. There are so many frustrating points in this. And much like one of the, I think Spencer and I are in agreement of, much like those girls that date people that they're like, I can fix this. I can make this better. We can work this out.
We can make this
better. We'll make him better. We can do this. There are just so many things that we're like, do you know, we need to take it back. We just got to chop off this bit, chop off that.
You can't do that with people. Chop off.
You know, I mean.
That's a bad analogy.
No,
you need to take that
no,
back.
No, because people lose their, what is it, their appendix.
Arms?
People take out their appendix all the
Since
time.
Since when have you said, you know what? I was dating that one person, and you know what I hated about them? Their appendix.
It was just trying to explode.
It just got in the way of our relationship way too much. It got between us so much, I had it removed. I had to.
But Spencer and I were talking about that if this had been built about the Machine Civil War, what had been happening in Io, the advancement of the team that was there, we would have gained more interpersonal perspective on those humans that were still around in Zion, no longer Zion, how they were growing. We would have created more connections. But then we were talking about, like, maybe Bugs, who we don't even really know this entire movie, she's like fuddling around at the end of the movie and she finds a modal or whatever, and she goes, why does this say T. Anderson? And then it just cuts, and it's like, maybe he's alive, maybe he's not alive, is he a ghost in the Matrix? Like, you could build this so much better with so much more fun and less money and less Jada Pinkett Smith.
So I've been thinking about this.
I'm all ears. Let's go.
The main problem is that this is real.
As we watched it. That's
no, it's real DC type maneuvers that we're seeing with this movie.
Oh, shoot.
Because I was realizing as we were talking about this, they would never do this because this is not the way they do things. They like need Keanu in this movie, not like in some future movie that people might, because it's too risky. Like that kind of like the more interesting way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's why, like, because like, I don't think WB as they are now, they'd never make the original Matrix like now.
Yeah. They couldn't afford to. I mean, not like money wise, they wouldn't be able to, the Wachowskis would not let anything go or let WB be like, you want this? And they'd be like, now we're passing. Okay. Bye.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, this is just,
and that's why that one line about I thought we had creative control from that video game really kind of struck me after I watched this movie.
Oh, there was one more that got me too. Mm. So when Neil Patrick Harris is kind of freaking out, he let slip that if this doesn't go well, his version of the Matrix, the suits, and he keeps calling them the suits, are going to roll it back to the old one. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. What?
Yeah, I don't even know what that would function
like. I don't know either. Like, how does that... I don't know, man.
I don't know where to go from that. Like, because there's all these implications throughout the entire film that this shouldn't be here. Not so much in the same mindset of, like, how... In the first trilogy, like in the first film, Neo knows something's not right and he has to search for the truth, even if it means going into uncharted territories to get released from the Matrix, to be free from it. This one just feels like Neo doesn't belong anywhere. Mm. He doesn't belong in the Matrix, nor does he belong in, you know, free in Io, because General Commander, whatever her name is, Niobe, doesn't want him there because it's going to bring unwanted attention, according to her. So what it tells me is that this doesn't have a place in the saga itself. It's almost like the director is saying, we should see this movie as something that doesn't belong anywhere.
Why are we making it?
Probably for the same reasons that WB said at the beginning of the movie.
What if the reason why she made this movie is she wanted to sabotage it? She wanted to make sure that, like, if at least it was going to be bad, it's going to be bad on her terms, so that the WB has, like, okay, we're not going to do this.
That's a good brilliant theory.
Because, like, having one bad movie is better than having three.
That is, you know, that's super brilliant. Like, yeah. If we're going to light things on fire, I'm going to light it on fire and nobody can stop me.
Yeah.
That, dude, that's good.
Because, like, that's the thing my brain's been working on. Like, that opening segment where it's like, suits, like this. Like, I'm like, this all means something in reality in our world. And I'm like, that's why I'm like, I'm coming to that conclusion because, like, I have
There's not much else to go to in this.
Because, like, I have a hard time believing she'd be like, oh, yeah, this is cool. I'm cool with this. Like, put my name on that.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, this is my best foot forward. Oh, yeah. And you're, no. Well, wrapping this whole conversation up, obviously there's a lot of different elements to this movie. There's a lot of subtext that just didn't really get understood. And ultimately, it didn't land the iconic superhero punch that we know Neo is capable of in this movie. So with all that said, let's go ahead and go around the table and talk about whether or not the film passes or fails and how many monocles. I want to start with Amy.
Just because you like long pauses? Or I'll start with myself. You like long pauses of silence?
How about, okay, I'll start with Spencer. Go ahead, Spencer.
Okay. No, this movie fails. Mostly because you're watching this movie and you're like, what is happening? Like, I don't know what the main real story is besides someone wanted money. And so you're just confused as they fly through a flurry of, like, video game analogies and, like, what is reality and what is really going on in this version of The Matrix. It's confusing and weird, and I don't like it. So for me, I'm going to give it, like, zero, because, like, I mean, I'll give, like, the only thing I really liked are, like, NPH's glasses, and, like, I can't rate on that.
You could, but you could, it would only like be like a point one.
I thought it's about it, something. But, like, nah.
You can give it a point two, one for each lens.
Yeah, no, I'm still I'm gonna stay at zero.
All right, Amy.
This movie does not pass for me. The heart, the care, the consideration, the honest, as Christina Ricci as the random marketing exec pop-up cameo in there, fresh originality is not there in this rehashing attempt of a reboot and a sequel simultaneously. While all it has done to really show us is that Neil Patrick Harris ages brilliantly.
Yeah.
So does Keanu Reeves. And Miss Carrie Ann Moss, keep on keeping on. You guys, you look great. I do not want to see this again, and it should be stricken from the retcanon, or launched out of a retcanon in an opposite direction. For Neil Patrick Harris's glasses, though, I will give him a 0.2 monocles, because that is some good glasses.
Okay. For me, it's really difficult. Like I said, I have a love-hate relationship with all three of these movies. And this particular film falls more into the hate category more than the love. So I'm going to fail it as a story, as a film, as its cohesiveness, as its, you know, consistency to maintain some kind of congruence throughout the whole film. It fails on all that. It's indicative when I said, you know, if you could take 5 minutes out of it and the film seemed like everything was fine, you know there's an issue. In terms of monocles, I'm probably going to... It sucks because I don't want to give it a zero, but it deserves a zero. Mm-hmm. Like,
did the cat get like a point
no,
one?
No, not even.
Deja vu, the cat didn't get anything.
don't look at Spencer. Spencer was never going to give a cat anything.
I never.
It's okay. You're allergic.
Movie's lucky he didn't get minus for that cat.
In terms of monocles, I'm going to give it a point one. And here's why. Because if who is it? If Lana Wachowski made every effort to make sure that this doesn't go any further than this movie and it succeeds, it is well worth that 0.1 monocle. So if that's what it is, that's what it is. And that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on any streaming platform over on iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom,
Spotify,
Pandora, TuneIn. We're everywhere where you stream podcasts. Drop us a subscribe. Let us know what you think. Give us a 5-star review. Also, you can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com with over 290 episodes. We'd love for you to take a chance and peruse through our lovely, what would you call it? Library.
It's our library.
Our library. There we go. Beauty and the Beast. We got a big library. check us out. Let us know what you think. Also, check us out on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Instagram and Twitter at filmlosophy101. Amy, where can people find Jane Unseen?
If they're actively looking on Instagram, the only place that I actively live, at Jane Unseen. And if you ever want to listen to something when I'm really trying to work on it, check my guys out and myself at thecapelesscrusaders.com.
She said she doesn't work on our show.
I try. We've just been having some real difficulties in doing our programming, but 'tis a new year approaching. Yay, verily.
Right. And of course, With the new year comes new wishes for all great things in store for every listener of ours and those that you care about. So we hope you have a great New Year's and a great time celebrating it. And so from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm IRL intern Amy.
Class dismissed.